Starting here with the Mishnah on the top of Chav Gimel and Aleph, the Mishnah begins, HaMakdish Nichasav Vaital Lav Kedubat Isha. Person's Makdish is possessions, but he's an outstanding debt towards the Kedubah of his wife. Lezer Omer, Kishi Gershena Yidor Ana'a. When he divorces her, he has to take a neder that he will get no benefit from his wife. We are worried over here that he might have some sort of collusion with his wife, and he's divorcing her in order that she collects the Kedubah from Hekdesh, because she has a shibud, she has a lien on the property prior to the Hekdesh that was done. And therefore, he's doing this intentionally to take the money back from Hekdesh, and then he'll remarry her. Shuomer, ain't no tzarich. You don't have to do that. Kiyotzi bedavar, we have a very similar situation. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, afarev liisha b'ktubata. Person who's a guarantor to a woman for a Kedubah. Vaya bala migarsha. And the husband is divorcing her now. Again, he has to take a neder ana'a because we're afraid, again, for collusion. The two of them together, the husband and wife, collude to have a fictional divorce. I mean, it'll be a real divorce, but it's fictitious in the sense that they really didn't want to get divorced. They're only divorcing her so that she can collect on a ktubah, go to the guarantor, take the money from the guarantor, and then they'll get married happily ever after again, but with the money of the guarantor, because the husband right now has no money, so can they use this collusion in order to get the money out of the guarantor? So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has this same concept that we are mentioning here by the Ktubat Isha and Hekdesh, according to the opinion of Rabbi Lezer, that Yidor Hana'a, take a neder Hana'a, so that he won't return the woman after he divorces her, in order to ensure to us that he's not colluding with the woman in order to take money away from the third party, whether it's Hekdesh or the Arev. But Micah Miflegate, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Lezer Savar Adam Osek Kununya Al Hekdesh. Lezer says that people collude against Hekdesh. People will do things to cheat Hekdesh. Rabbi Yeshua Savar and Adam Osek Kununya Al Hekdesh. Yeshua says that yes, people collude to cheat or to deceive other lay people, but they won't do it when it comes to Hekdesh. You don't cheat with Hashem. Velahadam Ravuna, we have a statement for Ravuna, Shchimera, Shiktish Kol Nechasav. Shchimera, someone who's on their deathbed, about to pass away, and he says, I makdish all my possessions to Hekdesh. V'amar maned l'ploni biyadi. But he says, after he said that, he mentions the fact that he owes 100 shekel to this individual. Neman, his belief. Chazaka ein Adam osek knunya l'Hekdesh. We have a principle that a person does not deceive, collude, cheat Hekdesh. So therefore, we don't worry about the fact that he's been Makdish Nechasav. And all of a sudden, he's telling us that this and so-and-so has a standing loan with him, or he has a lien outstanding, and therefore we have to pay him, even though he's been Makdish Kol Nechasav. Let us say that Rav Huna's position is actually a Machlok Tanaim, a Machlok between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So let's say that Lema Ketanai Amrata Shmaitata, that he said over his membra, but it's really a machloka tanaim. So he says, lo, that's not true. Ad kan lo pligi elu bebari. Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua are arguing about a healthy person. When it comes to a healthy person, we have a question as to whether they will collude or deceive Hekdesh. Afal b'shchiv mira, comes to a person who is on their deathbed, on their death throes, divri akol, in adam osek nun yale Hekdesh. Nobody cheats Hekdesh at that time. My time, what's the reason that they wouldn't cheat Hekdesh? In adam chteh velo lo. There's no benefit to him. A person sins, a person does things that are immoral when it benefits themselves. But they won't do immoral acts when it's going to benefit someone else. It's to someone else's benefit. Here he's about to die. He's going up to Shemayim. He's going to have to face the heavenly court. Here he's cheating to help some other party. He won't do that. By Shchimera, everybody will agree that there is no cheating of Hekdesh. Question is, when a person's healthy, got a long life ahead of them, do they cheat Hekdesh at that point in time? That'll be the machloka between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Igadamri, some say, Bibari kuli amalo plige. It comes to a healthy individual, nobody argues that Adam usek nunya al Hekdesh. That people do cheat Hekdesh to deceive Hekdesh. Neder shudar berabim k'miflegei. They're actually arguing about the efficacy of taking a neder to prevent the parties from cheating or colluding against Hekdesh. Mar savar yesh lo hafara, that there is an ability to be made for such a neder. So the neder is not efficacious, therefore there's no point in taking the neder. Mar savar ain lo hafara, that you cannot nullify such a neder. Since you can't nullify such a neder, the neder will be beneficial here, because if he takes the neder, that's it. We know whether he's colluding or not, because he now can't remarry this woman because the nether is outstanding. A nether that's taken in public, that you can get hafarat nidarim. You can get it nullified. Now here the word hafarat is not literally meaning hafarat, but really hatarat nidarim. She said you go to the chacham and he'll be matir the nether. He'll say I regret taking such a nether, and he'll be matir it for him. Tosvot asks if he goes to the chacham and explains the nether, no chacham is going to be matir the nether. Tosvot over here explains that he just has to explain to him the lashona nether, the wording of the nether. He doesn't have to explain to him the background of the nether. So he's going to explain to him the wording and from the word. wording, he could show that he has regret, and the chacham will be matir without knowing the context in which he's being matir. So then, what's the machloket? Hacha b'neder shudar al dat rabim kamiflegei. Not a neder that was done in public, but al dat rabim, on the basis of the public. And over here, we've seen this before. Tosfot spoke about the fact that this is done with the dat rabim, means with the leaders of the city, anything that's the public. And there, you can't be matir such a neder because the public good cannot be determined by any single individual. You'd have to ask the whole city. We do say that if the entire board of the city or of the community agrees that there is some benefit to the city, they can be matir the nether for their benefit. But they're not going to be matir the nether for this individual's benefit. And that's what they're arguing about. But then what are you going to do with the statement of a meimar? The nether shudar b'rabim yesh lo hafara, al-dat rabim ein lo hafara. A statement from a Meimar that says there is no Atarat Nidarim when it comes to Dat Rabim. And over here saying it's a Machloket. Let's say a Meimar's Memra is really a Machloket Tanaim. It's based on this Machloket between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Vitu. And also, if you say that's Machloket, this little statement of Rabbi Yeshua doesn't make sense. Yeshua says, Einu Tzarich. In our Mishnah, he says he does not need to take the Nether. He should say, Einu Mo'il Me'Bailei. It doesn't help. Right? The issue here is not whether he doesn't need to. It's the fact that even if he takes it, it won't help because you can do Atarat Nidarim. So that can't be the explanation. The machloket really revolves around the fact of whether you can be matir and neder ekdesh. One takes a neder to ekdesh. Can you undermine that? Can you change that? And that's based on another machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel say that when you have ekdesh ta'ut, a person makes something ekdesh by mistake, can you retract that? Can you remove that? Beit Hillel says yes. Ekdesh b'ta'ut ain't no ekdesh. Shammai says ekdesh b'ta'ut. If you make a mistake, it's still Ekdesh. Atanya, this is Atanya bin Nichuta. It's a bride that supports this understanding of the Machloket. Hamakdish Nichasav. Haital Lav Kudabat Isha. Like the case in our Mishnah, he's Makdish's possessions. And there's a woman who has a lien against it with her Ketubah. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Kushum Megarsha Yudor Ana'ah. He divorces her. He has to take a neder Ana'ah that he won't get any Ana'ah from this woman so that he won't take her back as a wife. Shuomer, Eno Tzarich. V'amar Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon. Hein hein divrei Beit Shammai. Hein hein divrei Beit Hillel. This is exactly the Machloket between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is the same as the Machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai omrim hekdesh ta'ut hekdesh. Shammai says if you make something hekdesh by accident, by mistake, it still holds. The hekdesh takes a hold of it and you can't remove it. Same thing, you can't be matir and neder hekdesh. Beit Hillel omrim hekdesh ta'ut and hekdesh. If you make a mistake when you makdish something, it's not hekdesh. And if you get a heter for your neder hekdesh, you can be matir that neder because it's really then done by mistake and it won't be ekdesh. So based on that, that'll be the positions of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua will believe, Einu Tzarich, you don't need this neder ana, because the fact that he holds Rabbi Yeshua like Beit Hillel, that ekdesh b'taot is not ekdesh. Therefore, the husband here has an alternative. He has two options. He can either collude with his wife, divorce her, collect from ekdesh, then remarry her. Or he can go to the chacham and say, this is not what I really thought. And he can be matir the neder. If he's matir the neder, it's not ekdesh. So obviously that's a much better way to go about doing this, is to be mat in the nether. Since he has that alternative, since he has that option, therefore we don't require him to make the nether ana'ah, because he has a migo. He would have had a much better way to do this than divorce his wife. So if he divorces his wife, it means that he really does want to divorce her. That's one. Rabbi Elazar says, you can't. He holds like Beit Shammai. Hekdesh v'taot is hekdesh. You can never remove the nether hekdesh. So this person only has one option to get out of this problem, and that's to collude with his wife. So since that's the only option for him, we make him take the nether ana'ah, in order to prove to us that he's not colluding with his wife to take back property from Hekdesh. And that'll be the basis of their machloket. Now, Tosafot asks, we paskin like Beit Hillel. We paskin like Beit Hillel that Hekdesh b'taot is eno Hekdesh. On the other hand, Ravuna, who's found in the Gemara in Shvata Dayanim, and in Baba Batra as well, that statement of Ravuna that says a Shchid Meirat does not cheat Hekdesh, believes that a healthy person does cheat Hekdesh. If a healthy person does cheat Hekdesh, that's exactly like the position of Rabbi Eliezer. So how do we reconcile those two positions? So Tosafot answers based on an explanation that he gave before, that there are different types of ways to cheat Ekdesh. There are small ways to cheat Ekdesh, and there are big ways to cheat Ekdesh. A small way to cheat Ekdesh is that a person has a shtar that this individual owes him money, and even if he's Makdish Nechazav, the person can show up to shtar and say, listen, Ekdesh owes me money, I'm going to collect based on my shtar, and he has a right to do so. The only thing is that we don't allow you to collect money from Ekdesh unless you take a Shvuah. So you'll have to take a Shvuah, and then you'll collect the money. By the fact that this Shchimira says, listen, I owe the money to so-and-so, that will prevent him from having to take a Shvuah. So even though he has a shtar and he would have had to take a Shvuah, by the fact that the Shchimira says, I owe him the money, gets rid of the issue that he has to take a Shvuah. So in that case, by a Bari, by a person, will say that a person will cheat Ekdesh. A person will cheat Ekdesh just to prevent the other party from having to take a Shvuah. In Ochanami, he has a shtar. He would have to take a Shvuah, so he just says it in order to prevent him from having to take a Shvuah. Small thing like that, people do collude or do things to cheat Ekdesh. On the other hand, if there wasn't any money here, or to do something big like divorcing his wife and this whole collusion in order to cheat Ekdesh, people won't do that. That's how we pass it. So we'll pass it like Beit Hillel with regards to Ekdesh to Odeinu Ekdesh by big items, and therefore the person will opt to be Matir Neder rather than to cheat Ekdesh in big ways. But when it comes to doing things with Ekdesh in small ways, like preventing the person from having to take a Shavuah, other things like that, in those instances, a person doesn't have any qualms about cheating Ekdesh, and he will do it, because that's not a big deal. Rather than being Matir Neder, there's a much easier way to go about doing things than cheating Ekdesh. Then the Gemara continues, Moshe Bar Artzvi, Arvo de Kalatehu. Moshe Bar Artzvi was the guarantor of his daughter-in-law's ketubah. And his son, Ravuna, was his son, Brei, Tzuri Midrabonu Navo. He was a big Talmud Chacham. His son was Ravuna. Utchikalei Milta. And he was having very difficult economic times, Ravuna. And he needed money. So Amar Abai, Lekka de Nisbe Eitzah de Ravuna. How come nobody has given Ravuna any advice? He should divorce his wife, and then he, based on the fact that his father is the guarantor of Ravuna's wife's ktubah, his daughter-in-law's ktubah, then they'll collect the ktubah from his father-in-law. And then afterwards he'll remarry her. Our Mishnah, we learned that you have to be Madir Hana'ah. So if he has to be Madir Hana'ah from this woman, he won't be able to remarry her. So what type of advice is this? Wait a minute. Not everybody who gets divorced in Beit Din. So if that's the case, only if he gets divorced in Beit Din will they force him to take the Neder Hana'ah. If he takes the Neder Hana'ah, he won't be able to return his wife. But if they do it without the participation of Beit Din, then they won't be Madir Hana'ah, and therefore he won't run into that problem. So then, the Sof, Iglai Milta de Kohen Havu. In the end, they realized that Ravuna was a Kohen, and if he actually divorced his wife, he wouldn't be able to remarry her anyway, because he can't marry a divorcee. So if that was the case, even if he did it outside of Beit Din, it would have been any help. So Rabbi, Barta Anya, Azli Anyuta. That the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. So here, Ravuna was poverty-stricken and had this little bit of play that he could have made in order to get some money. In the end, it doesn't work out because he's a Kohen. So he was poor, and he remained poor. Now the Gemara in a second will question whether this was such a good idea. How could Rabbi be giving advice to do something that's underhanded in order to get money? So we'll explain that in a second. The one thing I wanted to address before that is that the Shittu Mekubetzet notes an interesting thing. He says that there are many people, Ra'iti min agdolim, shetikdugu mikan, shalomi yidira b'shat netinat aget, shuvei midira uta. That if he doesn't take the Neder Hana'ah at the moment that he gives the get, that we don't force him to take the Neder Hana'ah later. How does he know that? They know that from our case over here. Abai says they won't do it in Beit Din. They won't do it in Beit Din, and therefore he'll get divorced, and they won't be Madir Hana'ah. But what happens later on when his father comes to Beit Din and says, look, they're trying to take this money? At that point, they'll force him to take a Neder Hana'ah. Or the father can force him to take a Neder Hana'ah. Why doesn't he have to make a Neder Hana'ah later on? So they conclude from this, these Gedolim, that the Neder Hana'ah only applies at the moment of divorce, not at a later time. Shittu Mekubetzet, it brings quotes from the Tosafot Rashi and says, Veloni Hirali, Tim Kain, Mayuli Uchachamim Takanatam. And what's the purpose of having this Takanat Chachamim that he's Beidor Hana'ah? If it doesn't have at that moment, it doesn't work anymore? No, it has to work all the time. Whenever it is, he'll take a Neder Hana'ah. So then what about this case? Why is Abai's advice to do it in private? Why is that gonna help? They'll figure it out later on, they'll make him take a Neder Hana'ah. So the answer he says is, to go to a Beit Din who doesn't know that the father-in-law guaranteed the ktubah, v'igarshena. Now we don't worry about the father-in-law forcing them to take a neder hana. Because had he known about the gerushin, he would have said, no way, don't do this until you're Madir Hana'ah. Says that the father-in-law is left with a choice now. Had it been before the fact, he would have said, take a Neder Hana'ah, and that would have prevented the divorce from happening. But now that the divorce has already happened, the father-in-law is left with two choices now. Either he pays up the ketubah, and they get back together, or he doesn't pay the ketubah, and she walks off and goes to another man. In that case, he's going to make a decision to pay up the ketubah. That would be in his best interest to pay the ketubah and see that his son still has his wife, rather than not have a wife at all or go up to another man. So because of that, the situation, once he's divorced, puts the pressure on the father-in-law that he has to make a tough decision. Over there, he'll make the decision to pay ketubah ta. But had we come beforehand, before that fact, and he asked him, we tell him we're going to divorce, he would say, wait, let's go to Beit Din and force the Neder Hana'ah, and that would have prevented the divorce altogether. So he wants to see his son stay together with his wife, but they're only depends on what the options are. before the fact, before they come to Beit Din, the option is to say, take another ana, and that would prevent them from doing the divorce because they wouldn't benefit from the divorce anymore. On the other hand, once the divorce is done, the only option to keep them together is to pay the ketubah, and that he would do. So that's a suggestion that Sita Mubetzit brings in the name of the Tosva the Rosh. Now the Gemara says, Umi Amar Abaye Hochi. Did Abaye really say such a thing that you can give such advice? V'Amar Abaye Ezu Rasha Arum, who is a terrible Rasha, Zeh Masi Etzalim Kor Minachasim Ki Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel. That's someone who advises to sell items or property like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And this is talking about what we call a residual trust. It's a Gemara that we've seen in Baba Batra, that a person gives over his possessions after death to a certain individual, and he says, whatever's left from that individual will pass to another individual. So it's a remainder trust. That remainder trust says it goes to Reuven. After Reuven is done, then it goes to Shimon. So Reuven has no obligations on himself. He can do whatever he wants with the properties that are there. And then when he dies, it'll go to Shimon. So it's this remainder trust. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over there says that if Reuven sells the property and does whatever he wants with the property, he's done. That Shimon gets absolutely nothing. Reuven has the option to go and sell that property, and then he keeps the money, and nothing will go to Shimon. Reuven is under no obligation to preserve the property. So no obligation to give the property to Shimon. It's just whatever's left will go to Shimon. If he sells it, there's no property left. So that is what the statement of Abaye says, is that if you give advice to someone where there's a remainder trust to go ahead and sell the property in order to prevent it from going down to the next level of the decoration of this person that passed away, that's a horrible thing to do. Because you know the intent of the one who passed away was to go to the first individual and then to the second individual. You're enriching Reuven at the expense of Shimon now because you're giving the advice to sell it. So he says, whoever gives advice like that, that's a terrible thing. Yet, Abai is suggesting over here to give advice to Ravuna to do a similarly underhanded thing, which is give advice to Ravuna to divorce his wife in order to get the money out of his father. Why do we distinguish between these cases? Somebody says, Bray Shiny, Vitzumer Mira Bonon Shiny. Says that there are two differences over here. Number one, it's his son. So when it comes to his son, we look differently upon this. Of course, the father wants to support his son. So therefore, over here, we would do it because it's the father and the son relationship. Number two is, he's a Talmid Chacham. He's facing very, very great economic difficulty. So here, in order that we can help him out, we'll do something a little bit, not so straight. But we don't say that this is the general way that people should act. It's an unusual circumstance. Wait a minute. Why don't we just say over here that it's not going to work at all anyway? Because a person who guarantees a ketubah, in the end, is not really obligated to pay for the ketubah. So the Gemara says, Kablan Avi. He wasn't just a Reva guarantor. He was actually a Kablan. Rashi says over here, it's a case where Rav Huna gave Metaltalim to his wife as a guarantee on the ketubah. The wife gave it to her father-in-law, meaning to Rav Huna's father, to hold on her behalf, and the father returned them to Rav Huna. So the father-in-law then, because of that, became obligated because of the property that was given to him by the wife. And that's what creates this additional shibud, this additional encumberment for the Kablan over the Arev. Kablan is a more extensive guarantor. It's a guarantor that basically says that he's on the hook. He is a first line of defense. Normally, a guarantor is a second line of defense. You first go to the party that owes the money, whether it's the husband here who owes the ketubah, or the debtor who owes money to the creditor. If they can't pay, then you go to the second party, you go to the guarantor. So over there, we say that a guarantor is not mishubad, that he really doesn't mean to encumber himself to pay for it. And we'll see why in a second in the Gemara. But then in a kablan says that I am guaranteeing, but I become like a first line of defense. You have a choice. You can go to the debtor or you can go to me. You can go to the husband or you can go to me. It's not that you have to try the debtor or the husband first and then come here. He becomes as if he's me'urav. He's involved in the case and as if he's a first line of defense, a first party that the creditor or the isha can go to. So instead we say that the father here was not just a guarantor, it was a kablan, a super guarantor. So when it says, Anich leman damar kablan afagav dilei l'nechasim l'lova mishtabed, that a kablan will encumber himself to make payment, even in a case where the debtor has no possessions. Over there where the debtor has no possessions, the kablan basically knows that they're going to come to him. Why would he ever do such a thing? So he said he's just saying things, but he's really not meaning it. He doesn't mean to encumber himself in that case. But there's an opinion that says that a kablan is such a strong guarantor that even in the face of the debtor not having any possessions, he will encumber himself. So that's what Gemara says here. That works well according to the one who says if the debtor has no possessions, the kablan is still mishabin himself. So there here too, the father was encumbering himself to pay for the ketubah, even though his son Rav Huna had no possession. But if the debtor has possessions, then he does encumber himself. If he doesn't have possessions, he's not mishabit himself. He's not encumbering himself. How do you explain the case? Mar says, the Rav Huna really did have possessions, and therefore the father, when he became a kablan, became a full-fledged kablan, but ishtaduf, they got blown away. The wind blew them away, or they got flooded. Some sort of natural disaster happened that wiped out the value of his property. So at the time of the ketubah, he did have property. At this point, he has nothing because some natural disaster wiped out his property. So therefore, at the time that the ketubah was written, he did have property, and the kablan did encumber himself. At this point, now he has no more property. They're going to go to the kablan, and it's fine. V'ibay tema, abo de gabi brei, shabim mishabim nafshe. That a father to a son encumbers himself, even in the face of the son not having property or not having possessions. So over here, even though normally a kablan would not encumber himself if the debtor has no possessions, over here with the father-son relationship, the father will do it because of that unique relationship between a father and a son. Ditmar, and we have a breito. Arev de ketubah dira kol lo mishtabed. The guarantor of a ketubah, everybody holds, does not encumber himself. Kablan de balchov. The person is a super guarantor towards a balchov dira kol mishtabed. For sure, he encumbers himself. Arev de balchov. A person is an arev, a guarantor, a regular guarantor to a balchov. V'kablan de ketubah plige. Or he's a super guarantor by a ketubah. There we have a machloket. Igal amandamar. There are those that say, itlei nichsei luloveh, mishtabit. Lele lo mishtabit. That if the husband here, or the debtor over here has property, then enochanami, it would work. The kablan would work by the ketubah, and the arev would work by the loan, by the debtor. Because he had property there, and therefore we assume that they are mishabed itself. They encumber themselves based on the fact that the likelihood is that they won't have to pay. On the other hand, lately, if he does not have any problem, lo mishabed, then he would not encumber himself because he's basically saying, what do you mean? I'm not going to encumber myself. I'm just saying things now because there's no way that you're going to come to me in the first place. And they'll say, afagav de lately mishabed. That even if he has no property, the debtor or the husband, nevertheless, there is a shibud here. By a kablan for ketubah and a rei babachov. And the Gemara concludes now, v'hilchata, the loch is, v'kulu, by all forms of guaranteeing, afagav de leitle, even though the debtor or the husband has no possessions, nami mishtabit. Everybody's mishtabit, levar. The only exception to that rule is a rei de ketubah. The guarantor of a ketubah, that was what we said before, the rei of ketubah does not really mean to encumber himself. To afagav de itle, lo mishtabit. Even if the husband has property, the arev is not really encumbering himself to pay. My time, mitzvah kavit velo midei chasrei. He's doing a mitzvah, and therefore we don't want him to lose out. What's the mitzvah he's doing? So Rashi explains to us, the mitzvah kavit lezavga. He's bringing them together. He's making a shidduch. He wants to make the shidduch go through. So he says, yeah, I'll guarantee the ketubah. He's just saying that so that the woman will marry the man, and they'll be together. So he's trying to create a zivuk. So he's doing a mitzvah. He says, yeah, I'm guaranteeing it. Not because he really means to guarantee the ketubah. He's saying that because he wants the woman to feel comfortable and to get married. So the whole point of the guaranteeing over here has nothing to do with really encumbering himself to pay for the ketubah. It has to do with the fact that he's trying to convince these two to get together and create a shidduch and do a mitzvah. So in that case, we say that there's no way that he really intended to encumber himself, and he is not encumbered in that time. How gavra does zavino l'nechsei v'kagar shalabitu? This individual came and sold his possessions. Then he comes to divorce his wife. Shachav yav yosef brei derova, kamei derapapa, arev tnan. Our Mishnah marriages an Arev, Hekdesh Tanah mentions the case of Hekdesh. In both those cases, our Mishnah addresses it and says that he has to be Madir Anah from his wife because we're afraid of this collusion problem. But the case that was not explained in the Mishnah is Lokeach. Mahu. Here, he sold his property. In this case, it was a Makdishit. In this case, it wasn't a case where he's going up against the guarantor. So here we sold the property, we're going after the kuchot, we're going after the buyers. So what's the din over here? Samalei, Tana Kiruchel, Nechashiv, Nezel? What do you want the Tana to do? To go on listing things like a spice seller, like a merchant who goes through everything that he has to sell? No, we don't want a laundry list of items. They gave you examples. Examples, so from that you can conclude anything that's similar to those examples should be that way. Lokeach is no different than the case of Arev and the case of Hekdesh. We're worried about a collusion. So we're worried about collusion here as well. And yes, he has to take another Anah. Now, Dayamre, the Tanan Tanan, the Lo Tanan Lo Tanan. And now you say, no, what's in the Mishnah? You have to take another Anah from. We worry about collusion. What's not in the Mishnah? We don't worry about collusion. Samar Misharshia, my time of the Naradai. What's the reasoning behind the position of the Naradai over here? That Lokeach should be different than Hekdesh or Arev. Bishlam Hekdesh, Mishum Revach de Hekdesh. By Hekdesh, we worry about Hekdesh losing money. We don't want Hekdesh to lose out. So therefore, we protect Hekdesh. Arev, nami mitzvah hu da'avad. Guarantor is really doing a mitzvah. He helped out two parties. Here, a person needed to borrow money. He helped him out. We don't want him to lose out because he did something nice. Why should he lose out by doing a mitzvah? Elo lokeach, by a buyer, why do we have to protect buyers? Every buyer knows that a man that you're buying from who's married has an astounding kutubah against him. Amai, nezov and nizban. Why did he go and buy from this person? He could have bought from someone else. Iyuhu, da'asid amnafshe, he caused his own loss. He knew the circumstances. He knew what was transpiring over here. If he bought the property, why do we have to give him extra protection? Because he did something silly. He knows there's a kutubah outstanding. So he has to, when he buys, take that into consideration. He has to leave over enough property. The fact that he didn't do that, we're not going to come after the fact and protect him from collusion. So that's the difference in the daya draw between a lokeach, a buyer, versus ekdesh and a rave. The ekdesh and a rave we're going to protect because either a revach of ekdesh, we want to make sure that ekdesh doesn't lose money, or by the rave, because he did a mitzvah, we want to protect him from losing out unnecessarily. But by a buyer, buyers assume risk. That's part of buying. So if he assumed the risk, then he has to deal with the risk. We're not going to come after the fact and try to protect him from collusion. And Tosfot has a question. Throughout Shas, we know that the Gemara says that a woman can collect from the kuchot. She has a ktubah, she has a primary lien on the property. She's always allowed to take out of the kuchot. Why is there even a question here in the Gemara? He doesn't understand the whole process, and then Nardai as well. What do you mean he can't take it? Tosfot says over here, there's a difference in the cases. In a case where a person sells property, and then divorces his wife sometime later, not in the same time period, not anything close to it, over there, we're not choshesh l'knunya. Over there, it takes on the normal course of regular life, regular circumstances. Over there, we assume that a woman can take away the ktubah from the buyers because she has a primary lien. On the other hand, this circumstance was unusual. He sells the property and immediately divorces his wife. So over here, it already arouses suspicion that there's something going wrong here. That he sold the property and all of a sudden now he's divorcing his wife immediately afterwards. So that already raises our antennae to the fact that maybe he's doing something that is less than kosher over here. So because of that, we investigate the situation. And I say in the end, too bad. We don't protect buyers. Buyers take their own risk. Baba says, no, it's just like the other cases, Arev and Ekdesh. And we have to protect them over here, just like we protect the Arev and Ekdesh. And therefore we worry about collusion. But it's this unusual case where the divorce comes immediately after the sale. Over there we worry about it. But in normal cases, we're not going to worry about it. And there wouldn't be any question of the fact that the woman can definitely collect from the Lekuchot. Right, next Mishnah. Hamakdish nechasav, vaital lav ktuat tisha. Person is Makdish's property, and the Ktubah Tisha is outstanding. Ubachov, and there's also Bachov, who's owed money. She's Makdish's property, but there's a Ktubah Tisha, you already divorced his wife, and she has an outstanding Ktubah over here. You have a Bachov, with an outstanding creditor, who already has a loan outstanding, and he wants his money. Eina Isha Yecholah Legvot Ktubata Min Akdish. The woman can't take her money out of Akdish. Lo Bachov et Chovo. And the Bachov can't collect out of Akdish. We'll see in a second why in the Gemara. Mishnah explains a little more. Ella podeh podeh amanat niten lisha b'ktubata l'bachov et chovo. You have to redeem it from Ekdesh. And in redeeming it from Ekdesh, you will then give the payments that are due to the Isha and due to the Balchov. We'll explain this. Rashi and Tosfot argue about exactly what this case is. I want to read the remainder of the Mishnah and then come back to this case. Dish tishimane. He was makdish tishimane. V'yochovo me'amane. And he had an outstanding loan. He was a debtor for more money than he was makdish. Musifo dinar. He adds on an additional dinar, upodeh nechasim eilu. He goes out and he buys out this property. Amanat liten lishak tubatal v'chov et chovo, to pay off his outstanding debts, whether it's the ktubat isha or to the balchov. The Gemara is going to explain in 1 second that what is the reason behind all this Mishnah. This Mishnah is based on Rabbi Abahu's principle that you can't take things away from Ekdesh without being podeh them. We are afraid of the appearances of taking things away from Ekdesh without pidyon. We have to redeem something from Ekdesh, because we don't want people to think that you can take Ekdesh without redeeming it. So no matter how much you give, it can be the smallest amount that you give, you have to give some token amount to make it look like you're doing a pidyon. So this case in the end is exactly like that. This case is a case where his outstanding debts far exceed what he was makdish. We don't allow him to take the property away from Ekdesh because you can't take it without pidyon. So over here we force him to redeem it. Achlok et Rashi and Tosafot, who does this? According to Rashi, the Baal Chov, the creditor, comes in, lends an additional dinar to him. With that dinar, he redeems that property. And then the Bachov gets all the property back. He gets everything that's there minus the dinar that he had to put up. He gets all that was there. It's below the amount of his loan. Whatever's there, he gets back. Same thing with the Ktubat Tisha. Now from Rashi, it sounds like, this is what Tosfot claims, I'm not sure it's Mukhrak and Rashi, that it's the Bachov's obligation to do the redemption. But from Rashi, it doesn't sound like that. It just says that the Bachov gives the debtor money, and the debtor has no money, and then he redeems it. Tosfot disagrees and says it's the debtor's problem. The debtor redeems it with his dinar, and then after that, they take all the property and give it to the Bachov or the Isha. So he sounds like the obligation's on the debtor to do it. Rashi sounds like it's on the creditor. Again, I don't think it's Mukhrak and Rashi that it's on the creditor, but that's the way Tosfot reads Rashi. So that's their Machlok in the second half of the Mishnah. But going back to the case in the first case in the Mishnah, where it says that you can't just give it to a Baal Chov, you can't give it to Ktubat Tisha. What's the case over there? Where it says, a podeh podeh. You redeem it and give it to them. So Rashi claims that's an introduction to the latter half of the Mishnah. Podeh podeh means that you give a little more money, and then you get it back. Hakeitzad, what's the case? That's the case that we listed in the latter half of Mishnah, where their loans, or the Tibet Tishar exceeds that which it was Makdish. So you give a little more money and you get it back. So suppose it says, that's not what it sounds like the Mishnah is saying. The Mishnah sounds more like this. It's a case where the Hekdesh exceeds the value of the loan or the Ketubat Tisha. It's the opposite case. And that's what the Reish is talking about. It's a case here where, for instance, he owes 90 maneh and he was Makdish 100 maneh. So his Hekdesh exceeds the value of the loan. So what do we say to him here? Apodeh podeh. He redeems the 10. The excess 10 he has to redeem. He has no right to take that 10 back. Because the 10 really belonged to Hekdesh. So the debtor over here, or the husband over here, will redeem, or the ex-husband over here will redeem that 10 that exceeds the loan value. And the remaining 90 will come out free and go to the Ketubat Tisha or to the Baal Chov. So that's why Tosfot explains that case in the ratio of a podeh podeh. Means that he has to do the pidyon on the part that he has to do the pidyon. The remainder will come out for free. It's not a case here where the value of the loan of Dubai exceeds the value of the Hekdesh. It's the other way around. The value of Hekdesh exceeds the loan of Ketubat Tisha. Therefore, there's a portion that he will have to redeem. And the debtor ex-husband will redeem that. And then the remainder will come out for free and go to the debtor or the Ketubat Tisha. As opposed to the case in the Seifa, it's a case where they have to put up a little extra money just to make it look like there's a pidyon. After it looks like there's a pidyon, all the money goes to Chov or to Ketubat Tisha. Now the Gemara is going to explain what I explained to you in the Mishnah already. Lamina the Meimar HaPudeh Pudeh. Hashem Rabbi Abau, because of this issue of Rabbi Abau, Tamar Rabbi Abau, Shlo Yomru Hekdesh Yotzeh Belo Pidyon. So nobody should come to the conclusion that you can take things back from Hekdesh without redeeming them. Matanitan to Lok Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Datan Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Imaya Chuvo Keneged Hekdesho. If his outstanding loan equals his Hekdesh, Pudeh, then he's allowed to redeem it. Vimlav, Eno Pudeh, then he's not allowed to redeem it. Rabbanan Ad Kamo. Rabbanan in our Mishnah disagrees, says it has nothing to do with the value of the loan being equal to Hekdesh. How much do they say that he can redeem it up to? Mar says, Amar Rav Huna, Bar Yehuda, Amar Rav Sheshet, Apalka. Until half the amount. So what's transpiring over here? Bishemot says that if the loan exceeds the amount that he was Makdish, then it's clear that when the lender or the creditor lent the money here, he didn't lend it based on the collateral of this individual. This individual doesn't have enough collateral to make up the loan. So he didn't lend them based on the collateral. He lent them because he believed that he would pay it back. And therefore over here, when he's Makdish the amounts or these monies here, he has no claim against that monies. Because they're really not collateral to him. They're not collateral because there wasn't enough collateral, and that means he lent based on trust. So therefore, in a case where the Hekdesh equals the loan, or the Hekdesh exceeds the loan, there he can redeem it and get the money back for the Baal Chov, because it's clear there that the lender did it based on the premise that he has enough collateral to pay him back. And therefore it is collateral. In a case where the loan exceeds the Hekdesh, or the Ketubat Tisha exceeds the Hekdesh, they really don't have a lien here. It was done on a premise of trust, not on a basis of collateral. Therefore, they can't take money from Hekdesh. Chachamim say no, that a person takes collateral for whatever he can get. Maybe he can't get the full loan, but he takes collateral up to a point. He says, all right, so I'll get 80% of my loan back. At least there's collateral for that. Therefore, a person loans, even when there's less than the amount of his loan in collateral, he still considers that collateral. Gemara wants to know, how far apart can that be? The Gemara answers that to 50%. If the collateral is below 50% of the value of the loan, then the person is clearly not basing the loan on the collateral. If a person has a recovery rate of less than 50 cents on the dollar, or 50 agurot on the shekel, then that type of person is not going to lend based on collateral. He's lending based on trust. Only if a person gets collateral in excess of 50% of his loan, then he's still lending on collateral. He says, at least I'll get this much back. But that only goes up to a divide of up to 50%. If it's below 50%, we don't consider collateral anymore. And the Chachamim will agree to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that over here he has no claim against Hekdesh because that's not really collateral. Rashi over here gives two interpretations about the Shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Shimon Gamliel says that if you lend Keneged Chovo, then you redeem it and you take it back. If it's not Keneged Chovo, then what's the din? So Rashi brought, and I explained this according to the first interpretation of Rashi, then you can't redeem it. There is no collateral over here. You don't get anything back. Rashi brings a second interpretation and says that when the loan far exceeds the collateral, then you take it back without even pidyon. You don't even need to redeem it at all. You can take the Hekdesh back. The guy has a lien on it. He can take it back and there's no questions asked. He gets it even without any pidyon. So that's the second interpretation Rashi brings down. And Rashi says, Varisho Nikar. The first one's the right one. I don't like the second one. Tosafot quotes both explanations of Rashi and says that the Tosefta sounds like the second explanation of Rashi, that it goes out without any pidyon at all. Let's explain that. Why is that the case? Shimon Gamliel says that you only have to do pidyon when there's some value that Hekdesh got. Hekdesh got some value against the Chov, you redeem it, and then he gets the money back. But if the amount is less than the loan, then it wasn't his to be Makdish. It wasn't his to Makdish. We don't worry about being pidyon. It never went to Hekdesh. Chachamim say, no, it looks like it went to Hekdesh. You're right. He doesn't have the right to be Makdishit. But nevertheless, he did it. And so from the outside, it looks like he was Makdishit. We're not going to give that away without being Podet. The Gemara then asks, how much do the Chachamim say that? The Gemara says, Ad Palg. Until it's less than 50% of the loan. If that what she's taking away from Hekdesh is less than 50% of the loan, everybody at that point will know that the reason that he was getting it back from Hekdesh was because he didn't own it. The loan value is so far away from when he was Makdish, then it's clear that this belonged to the creditor and doesn't belong to Hekdesh. So there you won't need Pidyon, even according to the Chachamim. Only once you're over 50% of the loan value will you need Pidyon, because over there it starts to become murky as to why is he taking it back. How much was the loan for? What's the difference in the property value? So because of that, the Chachamim say, above 50% you still have to be Podet, even if it doesn't exceed the value of the loan. Shimon Gomazil says, no, as long as it's not his to be Makdish, he doesn't have to do Pidyon. So that's the second explanation in Rashi, as well as what Tosfot brings from the Tosefta. All right, next Mishnah. Afal pi shamru chayvei arachin me'mashkenin oto. We said earlier in the perek that when it comes to someone who has to pay erech and he's not paying it, that we take collateral to ensure that he pays it in order to give him the impetus for paying. Nodim lo. Nevertheless, mazon shloshim yom. We leave him with enough food to eat for 30 days. Uksut shnei masar chodesh. Clothing to take care of himself for 12 months. Mita mutat. A bed that is made. Sandalav. His shoes. Vit tfilav. And his tefillin. We leave it for him, lo, for him. Ava lo lishto ulubanav. That's true for him, but we don't leave those over for his wife or for his children. We only leave him that amount, meaning that if we take collateral, we take collateral of anything that's in excess of his basic needs. His basic needs are clothing for 12 months, food for 30 days, a bed that is made, I mean that he can sleep in, shoes, and his tefillin, that we leave him. But that opportunity to leave him, that is only from his own property, but we don't worry about his wife or his children. So now the Mishnah continues. Himaya uman, noten lo shtei klei umunot. If he is a craftsman, an artisan of some sort, we leave him two of every type of tool that he needs. Mikol min v'min. From every kind. Charash. When it comes to a woodworker, adim no shnei matzadim u'shnei magirot. We give him two axes and two saws. Rabbi Lezer omer, im haya ikar, if he was a farmer, noten lo tzmado, chamar, noten lo chamoro, hayalo min echad. So Rabbi Lezer, we bumped into back on Daf Yudchet. Lezer omer, im haya ikar, if he was a farmer, noten lo tzmado, you give him the yoke for plowing the fields. Chamar, if he's a mover, he's a donkey driver, noten lo chamoro, you give him his donkey. Then, hayalo min echad meruba, o min echad muat. What happens, for instance, a carpentry worker who has three axes and one saw? Ein rim limkor eta meruba v'kach min hamuat. We don't say to him, sell one axe and then buy yourself a second saw. Ela nodim lo shnei minim min hamuat. He gets to keep out of the three axes. We leave him two. We take one away. Cho yesh lo min hamuat. And he has one saw. That's what he gets to keep. And that's it. He doesn't get to buy another one. He doesn't get to exchange it. So he keeps the one saw. He keeps the two axes. Until now, that was sufficient. So why should we give him more than it was sufficient until now? And the last thing is, a makdish nechasav, malin lo tfilav. Person who's makdish all of his possessions, malin lo tfilav. So Rashi says, we offer him the ability to redeem it and take it back. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here says, malin lo tfilav means that we take it. Hekdesh takes them and that's it. They're gone. He doesn't have a right to automatically redeem them. We do them and we do what we want with them. No lame menu. We take his tfilin away. My time, the Gemara wants to know over here, why in the Mishnah do we leave him basic necessities? When we're going to assess the value and to collateralize him, why do we do that? Because the Pasuk says, Imachu me'erkecha. The Pasuk says, someone who can't afford to pay the erachin, he say, v'emidol lifnei hakohen, he checks it out. So Gemara dash into Imachu me'erkecha. Who, they dash as hecheyehu me'erkecha. Give him a livelihood, give him a chance to leave, give him his basic necessities from the erach. I mean, that's excluded from the monies that we assessed in order for him to pay the erach. Avalolish tov v'nav. How come we only do this for him and not for his wife and his children? My time, it says, who me'erkecha? The Pasuk says who? That we only take care of him. He gets his basic necessities. When it comes to the Erechin, it does not include his wife and his children. Therefore, we do not exclude them from the value that we're looking to take for Hekdesh or on behalf of the Erechin that he promised. Now, Rabbi Lezer omer, ima yayikar notin lo tzmado. So Rabbi Lezer sounds like that the Tana Kam and the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Lezer. Rabbanon, hanu lab kleim unut ninu, ela nechasim ninu. Those aren't the materials of work. Those aren't the possessions that are used by a craftsman or an artisan or a worker. Those are possessions, period. Craftsman, a worker, has very particular tools. These are broader things that are considered possessions. These are real possessions of the individual, and therefore we don't leave it for him. Whether it's a chamor or whether it's a yoke of oxen to pull the plow, those are real possessions. Those aren't tradesmen's tools. Hayalo min echad. Mar says pshita. What's the question over here? We're going to allow to exchange one thing for the other. Mar says ki heche de sagile ad hashto. How come when he has three axes and one saw, we say to him, listen, we're going to take one axe away, you have two left, And so you stay with what you have. But says, that's pshita. What did he do until now? Until now, he was fine with two axes and one saw. So it continued to be that way. So Gemara says, no, until now, he had three axes. So he had one too many. He would lend that out. And then people would lend him a saw. So that's how he got two saws. So that's why, until now, it worked for him. Over here, if we take away his third axe, he won't have what to lend out. Therefore, nobody's going to lend him this saw. So, Kamash Malon, that Mishnah says, too bad. That's it. We leave him with what he had. He doesn't get that excess axe. And he can't exchange it for a saw. How Gavra does Avinu l'nichsei? Sold all of his possessions. Out of the Kamei de Rav Yemar. Hamalu, siklu lei tefillah. Take off his tefillin. They're going with the sale. My Kamash Malon. Matnitani. It's our Mishnah that says that you makdish your tefillin. You makdish all your possessions. Your tefillin go with it. Again, according to Rashi, whether you can be podet. According to Beinu Gershon, whether Hekdesh gets it. But either way, it goes to Hekdesh. So to hear, if you sold all your possessions, your tefillin are included in that sale. So Gemara says, my Kamash Malon. But Nitani, what is he telling us? No chiddush here. This is our Mishnah. Makdish nechazav mi'il no tefilav. So ma'udotem ha'atomu desavar mitzvah kavidna. Over there, he says, listen, I'm doing a mitzvah. I'm getting, donating my stuff to Hekdesh. So over there, he's willing to give up his tefillin in order to do that mitzvah of giving to Hekdesh. But le'inyan zvunei, when it comes to selling, that's not mitzvah to gufei lo zav min inish. Person's not going to give up the ability to do a mitzvah that belongs to him, the mitzvah of tefillin. So he would say, no, mashmalon, that yes, even in a sale, goes, everything goes, including the tefillin. So then the next mission begins. Echad ha-makdish nechasav, ve'echad ha-mechrich atzmo. Person makdish his possessions. Or he takes a nether erachin about himself. Ein lo b'ksut ishto, v'lo b'ksut panav, v'lo b'tzeva sh'tzava lishman, v'lo b'sandalin chadashin sh'lachan lishman. Then Hekdesh has no rights to go after the clothing of his wife, the clothing of his children, not with the items. He put in some sort of cloth, wool, that he sent to the dyer, but he was dyeing it on their behalf, I mean to use for clothing for them. V'lo b'sandalin chadashin sh'lachan lishman, brand new shoes that he bought, either for his wife or his children. Even though we say, that when you sell an evet, if you dress him up nicely, he sells for much more. If you buy him a cloak that looks nice for 30 dinar, it raises his price by 100 dinar. In that you gain 70. Same thing, you paint a house, the house will sell for more, even though the painting costs much less than the value that the house rises by. If you wait until the time of the shuk, when everybody's selling it, it's much nicer, and it'll get a higher price, fetch a higher price. Same thing with precious stones. You take it up to the main cities, you'll fetch a higher price. There are more buyers over there. Nevertheless, we don't do that on behalf of Hekdesh. We sell it now. That's it. Precious stone, whatever its value is, right here, right now, that's what we assess the value as. Same thing with the para. We don't wait until the shuk. And the same thing with the clothing over here. We don't dress somebody up or dress them up in order to make them worth more. Whatever's here is here. Chateau's mano. Time and place. That's what Hekdesh gets. We don't try to extend the time period or to go somewhere else to another location to gain more value for Hekdesh. The Gemara is quoting a pasuk. It's actually not found in the Parsha of Arachim, but found in the Parsha of Magdish Stei Mikneh. But there it says, V'chishav lo ha-kohen et michsat ha-erkecha ad shnat ha-yovel, v'natan et ha-erkecha b'yom ha-hu, kodesh la-Hashem. It says, v'natan erkecha b'yom ha-hu. So that's what the Gemara is saying. The Mishnah is premised on this, b'yom ha-hu, shelo yisheheh magalit le-kalim. You don't wait with a precious stone until you fetch a better price. You don't wait until go to the city. We don't wait until a better time when the prices will rise. We don't do that because by Yom Ahu, it says on that day. And we quoted this earlier in the Gemara back on Daf Yud Chet. That's the hakesh between Arachim and Nidarim. One of the dinim that we have by Arachim that applies to Nidarim as well. So here it is. That's din of Magilut LeKalim. Also, Gemara here now continues with the drasha of what we have on the pasuk, which says it says Kodesh Lashem. Stam Hekdesho to Perek Abayit. Person who does not define what he's being Makdish for. You can be makdish something like dusha the goof. You can be makdish the mizbeach. You can be makdish the berak abayit. You're going to give a chayrim to the kohenim. So somebody just says that I'm makdish stam without any definition. We say goes to berak abayit. Stam hekdeshot berak abayit because it says kodesh l'Hashem. It's stam when you give money. Stam erachin. They go to berak abayit. They go to Hashem.
Where the only beneficiary is Hashem, not the kohenim and not the mizbeach. And that's what it means. Kulo l'Hashem. Kodesh l'Hashem.
Tosfot asked a question we just saw in the previous couple of dapim. This idea that you have to auction off property. And you have to wait 30 days, 60 days to announce the property, auction it off for Hekdesh. Well, why do you have to do that? We just learned in this Mishnah, it says by Yom Ho on that day. The Tosfos says we distinguish between Metaltalim and Karka. Karka, which will always be around, and we can fetch a higher price. Over there we say, let's put up an auction and get a better price. By Metaltalim, we have the fear of it getting lost, it getting stolen. If you announce there's this precious item over there, there's risk to announcing it. So we don't want to take that risk. We'd rather monetize it immediately and get the benefit of Hekdesh than take the risk that it gets lost and Hekdesh gets nothing. So this Mishnah is only speaking about things that are mitaltlim. But when it comes to things that are karkaot, that are properties, fixed property, over there, we would say that you do an auction, because there we're not worried about losing the money, losing the property. We'll only gain by putting it up for auction. Okay, with that, we'll stop at the end of the parak and continue with the new parak tomorrow.